This is The Guardian.
Today, as Boris Johnson awaits one make-or-break inquiry into rule-breaking in Downing Street, he's been forced to launch another into Islamophobia at the heart of his party. What happens now? The new year has brought with it major policy decisions for Boris Johnson. How to respond to a worsening crisis in Ukraine.
Russian forces training near the border with Ukraine. Just some of thousands deployed there since the autumn, raising fears in the West that Russia's planning an invasion.
How quickly to lift COVID restrictions after the current wave of infections.
As restrictions finally do ease, hospitals are braced for another period of uncertainty. They hope demand won't increase, but nobody knows for sure.
Should he go ahead with a plan to raise taxes in the face of a catastrophic rise in the cost of living?
Tax rises and spikes in energy bills will hit communities like this all over the land as another crisis lies in wait.
But all these questions have been drowned out by a far more existential one for the Prime Minister. Can his premiership survive?
It is fair to say that support for the Prime Minister has been eaten away. The question now is what's left substantial enough to sustain him through what will be tough days ahead?
As MPs wait for the official report into COVID rule-breaking at the centre of the Prime Minister's Downing Street operation, new allegations emerged last night that Johnson had a birthday party involving up to 30 people during the first lockdown, despite the ban on indoor gatherings. And in recent days, Boris Johnson and his party have been battered by a series of new claims.
In recent days, a number of members of Parliament have faced pressures and intimidation from members of the government because of their declared or assumed desire for a vote of confidence in the party leadership of the Prime Minister.
At least 12 MPs have claimed that party whips have been using intimidation and even blackmail to squash rebellions among backbenchers. And this week, former Minister Nusrat Ghani has gone public with her claims of rampant Islamophobia within the Conservative Party. For a Prime Minister who was once said to be planning a decade or more in power, the coming days could seal his fate. From The Guardian, I'm Nosheen Iqbal. Today in Focus, as the scandals mount up, is Boris Johnson sinking? Peter Walker, you're a political correspondent for The Guardian, and before we look at the non-stop carousel of revelations about Downing Street parties, which we will come to, I want to start with the allegations of Islamophobia in the Conservative Party. Can you tell me first of all about Nusrat Ghani, the MP who has made them? Who is she and what can you tell me about her career so far?
Well, she was the first Muslim woman elected as a Conservative MP.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for this opportunity. It is a great honour to represent Wealden in Parliament.
She was elected in 2015 and rose through the ministerial ranks reasonably quickly.
In fact, my parents arrived in this country over 40 years ago. My father exchanged his Kashmiri headmaster's cloak for Birmingham biscuit factory overalls. And here I am, just one generation later, giving my maiden speech in the greatest democratic chamber in the world.
She was a junior transport minister. But then in early 2020, there was a mini reshuffle. If people remember when Sajid Javid was the Chancellor under Boris Johnson and suddenly quit.
Why did you resign, Mr. Javid?
Was Dominic Cummings forced you out?
There's a mini reshuffle as part of that. And Ghani went and she's been on the backbenches ever since then. And it was never really explained why she went. But then in reshuffles, you don't necessarily need to. Ministers are seen as good or bad, or there's a reason to move someone else into their place. And up to a couple of days ago, that was all we ever knew, really.
And what did she say about why she was sacked in that 2020 reshuffle?
At the time, she didn't say anything, because if you're an MP and you lose your job, you take it on the chin as best you can and you hope that at some other future point, you know, maybe even if the PM changes, then you might get the chance to come back. But this all changed that at the weekend, she did an interview with the Sunday Times where she made this completely astonishing and shocking revelation that she said that at the time she was sacked, she obviously, you know, privately asked why. And the quote was, she was told that her, quote, Muslimness was, quote, making colleagues uncomfortable.
What was exactly meant or understood about her Muslimness? Where specifically did the allegations come from?
We don't know. All that we know is that she was supposedly told this by a whip. She didn't say who it was. Mark Spencer, the chief whip, after Ghani's interview was published on Sunday night, put out a tweet saying that he didn't want any of his colleagues to become involved with this, that he was the whip who she talked to. But he said this was absolutely not the case. You know, he denied ever having had such a conversation. So you're at this slightly tricky position where two people are saying entirely contradictory things.
So how did Boris Johnson react to these allegations?
At the time, he seemingly, according to Nusrat Ghani's take on things, basically said to her, well, this is a party matter. You know, there's not much I can do. You need to make a formal complaint to the CCHQ, the Conservative HQ, internal kind of disciplinary process. And she said that she wasn't very, very keen on this. You know, she didn't have a lot of faith in it. And there's plenty of reasons why, you know, that would be the case. It doesn't seem to work particularly well. But she also made the point that it wasn't really an internal party matter. It's a ministerial matter. So it would seem a bit strange to do this kind of internal party procedure where the biggest sanction would be thrown out of a party when some people are not necessarily even members of that party.
And what Ghani says happened isn't actually a shock to some of us. I mean, the Conservative Party has been dogged by allegations of Islamophobia for years now. Last year, we saw the report by Professor Swaran Singh, a former Equality and Human Rights Commissioner, who analysed more than 700 separate incidents recorded in the Tories' complaint database in the last 6 years. And in his report, he did say anti-Muslim sentiment remains a problem within the party. Separately, Hope Not Hate have polled Conservative Party members and found that more than half of them think that Islam is a threat to the British way of life.
So yes, there was a report into Islamophobia and other prejudice in the Conservative Party that came out last year. And it did have some criticism, for example, of language used by Boris Johnson and particularly the very prejudiced London mayoral campaign run by Zach Goldsmith.
Hi, Jack.
Hi, Ali.
I want to know why you've run such a vile, disgusting Islamophobic campaign. You sent letters to the Indian communities, to the Indian and Tamil and Sikh Londoners, suggesting that Sadiq Khan would not stand up for them as a mayor. And you've continuously maligned Sadiq Khan, used his background as a Pakistani Muslim or a Muslim of Pakistani descent.
Thank you, Ali. I have to tell you, you are completely and utterly wrong. I have never referenced Sadiq Khan's religion or his ethnic background directly or indirectly. That is simply not true.
It's been a long-standing issue for the Conservatives, and having Boris Johnson as party leader is not necessarily the ideal environment in which to make things better, because he's obviously someone who said some really, really outrageous comments about Muslim women looking like letterboxes and things like that.
Does it help that a prime minister of this great nation would use the terms bank robber and letterbox to describe Muslim women who wear a burqa?
Well, you know, people, Philip, dig out all sorts of
questions. You said it.
All sorts of articles.
You said it.
And I will say, and I've already said sorry for any offence that I've caused, and I say it again, but let me...
And there have been a few high-profile Muslim MPs within the party, Nadeem Sawi, Sajid Javid, and notably Saida Wasi, who has cut a pretty lone figure for the last 5 to 6 years in her campaign to root out anti-Muslim bigotry within her party. How have they responded to these latest allegations?
Saida Wasi has said it has to be looked into.
But words have to be followed with action. And I think there is still a sense within sections of our party that the British Muslim communities are electorally irrelevant and politically dispensable.
But she's very much, as you say, this kind of lone voice. She was a Tory party chair and she's a member of the Lords, but she hasn't really got any other particularly official role within the Conservative Party. And she's been adamant for a long time that there's a very, very big problem of anti-Muslim sentiment within the party, which she says she's experienced.
The community does feel under siege at the moment. There are conversations happening in middle-class Muslim homes right now across the country, people who are socially mobile and people who can move up and out, about is there an alternative?
So Hawi sent out a quite trenchant tweet quite soon after the interview came out, saying he stood with Nusrat Ghani and there had to be a full investigation.
I know Nusrat well. She's a friend. She is a very talented parliamentarian. And I tweeted saying that the allegations she made are very serious. There is no place for Islamophobia or any form of racism in my party.
He was on the radio on Monday morning and was kind of rolling back a little bit, and he was defending Boris Johnson. He was making the point that he thought this was something the party should have looked into, because whipping is a kind of party political matter rather than a parliamentary matter. You know, so there's a certain amount of cabinet loyalty there.
The correct process now is to go through the cabinet office, which is why the Prime Minister has taken the decision that this is an important inquiry, that the cabinet office should look at this and look at it swiftly and thoroughly.
Sajid Javid also sent a tweet. He described Ghani as a friend and a critic to the Conservative Party, and he said it's a very serious matter which needs a proper investigation. Quite strong words. And Javid is someone who's been through, I guess, similar stuff like this in the past. He's talked very eloquently about when in 2019 he was standing for the party leadership, how he'd at times faced prejudice and certainly misunderstanding as someone from a Muslim South Asian background.
Nusrat Ghani's allegation goes back 2 years. Why are we only hearing about it now?
To an extent, it's open season for people to be able to raise things which are coming up within the Conservative Party because of the investigation currently going on into alleged lockdown-breaking parties inside Number 10. There's been this kind of mass bringing out the dirty linen. And many people would argue that when Ghani made the complaint, particularly, you know, the fact she went to Boris Johnson, there should have immediately been a internal party and internal government investigation to look into it. Because the reasons for this, certainly being given on Sunday by Dominic Raab, was that she hadn't wanted to make the complaint to the Conservative Party. And without someone making the complaint, then you can't do anything about it. But lots of people pointing out that's quite odd. If you were, say, working for a big company and someone very, very senior, someone on the board, said they'd basically been sacked because they came from a certain background or had a certain faith, even if they didn't want to talk about it, then the company would do something about it. They'd go through an HR process. They'd try and find out who said what and why. They'd try and establish the facts. So it doesn't look brilliant for the government or the Conservatives. It's taken so long for this to come out.
Peter, a failure to take allegations of anti-Semitism seriously enough have proved to be really damaging to Labour. How much concern is there in the Tory party that this could be in any way similar?
I don't think currently there are many concerns about it, because basically they've been allowed to go on with things being the same for quite a long time. I think the issue for the party would be if the Equality and Human Rights Commission launches a formal investigation into the way the Conservative Party dealt with this in the way they did with Labour. That could be very damaging, because the EHRC is a very, very powerful body and could make recommendations and could basically force change.
Islamophobia within the Conservative Party is one major issue that Johnson needs to face up to. And the party's whips office is also facing serious allegations. What have they been accused of?
The whips are currently being accused of intimidation and blackmail and trying to stop constituencies represented by disloyal Conservative MPs from getting government cash. And there's an extent to which this has always been a kind of open secret, even something kind of joked about in a slightly downbeat way by MPs, because whips have always been extraordinarily tough and they've done all sorts of things to try and make sure, particularly in close votes, that MPs, you know, vote on what they see as the correct way. I mean, in the past, certainly in like the 60s and the 70s, it was not unknown for whips to be physically rough with MPs. There was a quote from Jack Straw, the Blair era Labour minister, which was floating around on social media a couple of days ago, which I'd not seen before. And Straw was saying that when he first became an MP in the 70s, this very big, burly whip at one point grabbed him in the corridor, pushed him against a wall and kind of grabbed his testicles and kind of leaned into him in this threatening way. And Straw said, "What have I done?" And so the story goes, the whip said, "You haven't done anything yet, so imagine what I'll do if you do something." And this is basically the sort of bullying which in a modern workplace you don't get. But it's been something which has again come out now, because William Ragg, who is a Conservative backbencher and is also on the executive of the 1922 committee, which represents Conservative backbenchers, he was one of the first Conservative MPs to say they'd put in a letter calling for Boris Johnson to have a no confidence vote. And he made this extraordinary statement last week, basically saying that MPs in a similar position to him had been essentially, he claims, blackmailed and threatened by the whips, that some of them, he says, were told that damaging stories would be leaked to the press about them. Wills had this other claim that Christian Wakeford, the Conservative MP who defected to Labour last week, after he crossed the floor, he said in a TV interview,
I was threatened that I would not get the score for Radcliffe if I didn't vote one particular way. This is a town that's not had a high school for the best part of 10 years. And how do you feel when holding back a regeneration of a town for a vote? It didn't sit comfortably, and that was really that kind of starting to question my place where I was and ultimately to where I am now.
So what has the government said about the allegations, and whose job is it to investigate them?
Basically, when William Ragg made his allegations, Number 10 said they'd not seen any evidence to support his claims, which I guess is a clever way of words saying it doesn't necessarily mean it never took place, but they've not seen anything. And they said if there was any evidence, they'd look at it very carefully, but they didn't explain how. Things have taken a slightly more official turn in that William Ragg, who said at the time he believed that some of the things that were done, you know, connected to blackmail, he's going to be going to the Metropolitan Police, because he basically believes that some of the things the whips did crossed the threshold into being criminal.
The intimidation of a Member of Parliament is a serious matter. Moreover, the reports of which I'm aware would seem to constitute blackmail. As such, it would be my general advice to colleagues to report these matters to the Speaker of the House of Commons and the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police. And they're also
coming up
to contact me.
Westminster is waiting for a crucial report to come out this week into parties at Number 10. What will it mean for Boris Johnson? Peter, just as we thought we'd heard about all the parties in Downing Street, last night we learnt of new claims that Johnson had a birthday party during the first lockdown with around 30 people said to have been there. How does this compare to the other allegations being investigated?
It's kind of more of the same, except the difference is that this feels less of a work do. You know, this was a birthday event. It seems to be mainly work colleagues there. And it's this strange thing of Downing Street being a combination of a home and a workplace. ITV, who've broken a lot of stories on this, are saying that Lulu Little, the interior designer who redecorated the Johnson's Number 10 flat, was also there. And I guess they could argue she was working the flat at the time, but it doesn't look great. I mean, you know, it just every time Sue Gray must think her rapport is finished, she has to kind of open up a new file. It just seems to be endless. And it's just quite difficult for the government because every time they think they've bought themselves a bit of respite, something else like this comes out.
It's just extraordinary. And up until this new twist, we were expecting Sue Gray to deliver her report any day now. Do we know how close she might be to concluding it?
The short answer is that no one knows. Sue Gray is running a very, very tight ship. And it seems that not even Number 10 can push her towards finishing by a certain time. There are very, very strong rumours at the end of last week that Downing Street were keen for the Gray report to be out on Monday or Tuesday of this week, so Johnson wouldn't have to face another Prime Minister's questions on Wednesday, having to say, basically, I can't talk about this until the Gray report comes out. However, more evidence keeps on coming out. And Dominic Cummings, who was Johnson's former chief aide, made more allegations last week. And Gray is believed to be speaking to him early this week. I think the smart money is probably on it coming out maybe Thursday or Friday of this week.
So since the stories over Downing Street parties broke and kept breaking, minister after minister has been interviewed and asked what they think about those reports that Boris Johnson broke his own lockdown rules by going to the so-called gatherings.
It is being investigated by Sue Gray, a civil servant of the highest integrity and of the greatest reputation.
We are waiting for an inquiry by our very formidable civil servant, Sue Gray, to conclude to... We can't judge what happened. We need to know the facts.
This will be part of the investigations taken on by Sue Gray, and we must wait to see what comes through in that.
They've said they won't pass judgment until Sue Gray's report comes out. So what's going to happen when it does?
Ministers like to style this report as being a kind of independent inquiry, but it's nothing of the sort. She certainly has independence of mind, but she works for the government. She works very, very closely with people in Number 10. One of the tricky things, it seems, for her is that she's got a lot of facts, but she can't really, as a civil servant, present them in a way that says categorically, I don't know, the Prime Minister lied, or these were parties which very, very clearly broke the rules and the Prime Minister should have known and didn't know. She can't provide that smoking gun necessarily, which would mean that Johnson would have to step down or his MPs would have to push him out. You know, and that's just because it's not her job. Potentially, it could be that this kind of long list of facts and the parties that took place, who was there, what was drunk, what the police said, all that kind of stuff, could seem in black and white so damning that Johnson has to go after that. And the other thing to bear in mind is we don't quite know what elements of the report are going to come out. The terms of reference just said that the findings would come out. And that could be anything from the entire thing, like, you know, 30 or 40 or more pages. Or it could just be that when there's been similar reports in the past and they promised to put the findings out, that's only been a couple of pages. So, you know, there's very, very much a number 10 news management operation underway. And they've said that the moment it comes out, Boris Johnson will give a statement to the Commons and answer questions. There'll be full scrutiny. But if they're refusing to release full details of what Sue Gray actually found out, then that gives him a certain amount of wriggle room.
Last week, we heard about Conservative MPs scheming to get rid of the Prime Minister. And the plan apparently was led by the newish batch of MPs in red wall seats, dubbed the pork pie plot. Then, just before PMQs on Wednesday, a Tory MP defected to Labour. And rather than building more momentum against Boris Johnson, his party then seemed to rally around him again. What's the mood like now in the Tory party?
The mood in the Conservative Party is hysterical, if not quite as hysterical as it was maybe this point last week. Basically, no one knows what was going on. I think a lot of MPs were slightly taken by surprise at the speed and scale of this plot. And there were an awful lot of extremely confident predictions that by, you know, X time on a certain day, they would have reached a threshold of 54 letters to the 1922 committee, triggering the no confidence vote. And that didn't take place. And one of the weird things is that obviously no one apart from Graham Brady, who's the senior Conservative MP who chairs the 1922 committee, no one knows how many letters there are. So we might currently be on 53. We might currently be on, like, you know, six.
And could you clarify why exactly it was that intake of 2019 MPs, the newbies who were elected on the back of Johnson's popularity? Why were they the first to move against him?
One of the reasons is they know each other all quite well. It's like a kind of, you know, year group who've just arrived at a massive like school and the sixth formers are quite mean. One of the other reasons, which if you talk to longer standing Conservative MPs, is that they view the 2019 intake as this slightly feral, unsocialised bunch because their arrival at the Commons coincided within a few months with COVID. And so they were working from home for months and months and never got this normal induction MPs get into in the kind of arcane and strange ways that Westminster works. And again, perhaps there's an element to it, but I think the most important thing is too, is that quite a lot of them won seats which were former Labour seats and which they didn't win by that many votes. And they know that they were only in with any chance of staying in Parliament if they have a Prime Minister who's popular. And whilst Johnson was obviously the Prime Minister who won the seats for them in the first place, if he's seen as damaged goods, then there's a very, very big vested interest for them to move and move fairly quickly.
So how quickly could his demise come if the Sue Gray report finds serious failings or evidence that he personally broke the law?
If there's a rush of letters after the report comes out, then it's possible, even later this week, that there could be the announcement that the threshold of 54 letters has been reached. What Graham Brady tends to do is that he gives the Prime Minister of the time at least a few hours warning, if not overnight warning, saying, look, I've reached the number of letters and I'm going to announce it to the public, you know, at X time. And once that takes place, there's a confidence vote amongst Conservative MPs, which happens fairly quickly. And to survive in office, Johnson would have to win more than 50% of the Conservative MPs' votes, which is 180. And if he did that under the current rules, he'd be safe for 12 months. But basically, if he lost the confidence vote, then that is it. He'd be the PM just because basically you need to have someone in office. But the Conservative Party would immediately start this process of picking a new leader, which can take up to a couple of months because you have to ballot the Conservative Party members to pick the final two. So Johnson would be in office, but not in power necessarily. And, you know, it's also possible he might think, you know, I can't be bothered with this and resign straight away. You know, the end when it comes could be very, very rapid.
Peter, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Peter Walker. Do follow his reporting and that of the Guardian's Westminster team in the crucial days ahead for Boris Johnson. Find it all at theguardian.com. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Hannah Moore and Tom Glasser. Sound design is by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Maithili Rao. We're back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.